We're going to have Joel, one of our elders, tell his testimony. Some of you may have heard some of his testimony at our banquet. But, you know, when you go to weddings, part of the thing about going to weddings is you hear the vows, right? And if you're a married person, you kind of hear that thing, and it kind of brings you back to your marriage, right? It brings you back to your wedding and what happened at your wedding. And so it's a good time because it kind of, you're happy for the couple. At the same time, it brings back remembrance of your own marriage vows and so forth, yeah? And that's just kind of the thing with a testimony. You're going to hear just a great testimony by Joel. And by the way, Joel's, I've been seeing him over the years, his character just growing and growing. You can tell from the things that he shares from just by being up here and being the chairperson that he does take some time to think about God and the things that are on God's heart and that God has put on his heart. You know, he's been coming to our small groups for so many years. He's been teaching for so many years, and I've just been seeing him grow so much over the years. And I just wanted to let you know that we're very confident of him being one of the elders because of his attitude, his humble heart, his heart to learn, his teachability and so forth. It's just makes him a prime candidate for someone to be elder. So we're really pleased to have him. But he's going to be sharing his testimony. At the same time that he shares his testimony, just like when we go to a wedding and we think about our own marriage, it helps us to think about our own journey to finding Jesus. When we hear somebody else, we're happy for Joel, and we thank God for Joel and all the things that he's done. But also, it brings to mind how God has worked in our lives also. So it's very important for us to hear and to listen to testimonies of other people for that very reason. So at this time, I'd like to call up Joel Dudulao to share his testimony. Give him a hand.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Jen said I'm nervous, but I don't have time to be nervous. I had to do chair, then I went back there, so... And I told John yesterday at practice that, hey, maybe you should just give me a song. I'll sing it too already. So anyway, thank you, Daniel, for those kind words. You know, I think everybody who's been a part of this church knows Daniel already. And, you know, my first memories of Daniel was he invited me to play basketball with them. And I pretty much stunk it up on the court. I did really bad, but he invited me again. And I don't think he cared because I think what mattered more to him was for me to meet his coach, and that was, you know, Jesus Christ. And, you know, I'm just thankful for someone like Daniel, you know, someone who's very gracious, very humble, and, you know, had a servant mind, and I appreciate his leadership and, you know, just kind of just walking me along in fellowship of the Lord. So thank you, Daniel, for those words of support. Well, anyway, before I go any forward, let's look to the Lord in prayer. Heavenly Father, I'd just like to thank you for allowing me this time to share my testimonies. It's not even my testimony, it's your testimony. It's how you have worked in my life as a tool to reach others. And I just hope and I pray that through this testimony, through this sharing, that people in this room will be reached. Maybe people that they know, they can share that, you know, there is a foundation built in their hearts that's just waiting to be rebuilt. We ask these things in your son's name. Amen. So as I mentioned earlier today, you know, a couple weeks ago, we went to Maui for a week-long conference with the IBW. And I was relaxing in the hotel room with Jen, and I get a text from Stan, and he tells me, he asks me if I want to speak today. And it wasn't an email, because email nowadays, you can, I don't say I do it, but you open the email and you kind of push it to the side. But it's a text. Depending on what kind of operating system you have, you open the text, it tells the sender that you read it. So I read it, and of course I had to think about it, I had to pray about it. It took me a while, maybe about 15 minutes later, I replied to Stan. And you know, while I was praying, I was, you know, asking God certain things that, you know, are you sure you really want me to do this? It's kind of weird, yeah, when you think about it. Asking God if he's sure, right? Then I asked myself, there's a doubt that went in, and I asked myself, oh, am I ready again this time? You know? And then I started deflecting. What about Daniel? Daniel's a good speaker. Everybody likes listening to him. And then after that, I went into the blame phase. I was like, oh, Steve is up in California. He's fishing, and I got to come over here. What about Steve? So anyway, eventually, I replied yes. And then Jen was asking me, hey, who are you texting? And I said, oh, it's Dan. And he asked if I wanted to share my testimony again. And I told him, sure. And Jen said, you know, at the spring banquet, most people heard it already. So don't you think you should just be giving a message? So I looked at her, and I asked her, what was my main theme of my testimony? And she looked down. She said, I don't know. My own wife. My gosh. That's why I put her back there, so she can hide her face. Anyways, if you guys don't know who my wife is, that's Jennifer back there. You have the pictures. Next. Yeah, the wedding picture. That was in 2003. And that last picture was last fall. And we've been together for 25 years. Been married for 16 years. And I know this gets old, but I'm going to say it anyway. That's been the best 16 years of Jen's life. She's a teacher, like she mentioned. She's going to start school tomorrow, so you know, it's really hectic around the house. She's running all over. And we have two boys. The older one with the hat is Jake. He's an eighth grader at Camemio Schools. He's our compliant son. And the younger one with the shaka, that's Jackson. He is a sixth grader at Manana School. And let me see. Yeah, he's the one that's here. I think some of you guys know him. But anyway, if you heard our testimony at the spring banquet. Oh, sorry, yeah, I forgot. I forgot our dog, yeah. So that's our dog, Snibbles. He's 14 and a half years old. He's getting up there in age. And next slide. That's our newest addition and grandma's favorite, Yeti. So we have a whole story behind this cat. That's for another day, but I just want to let you know that we found that cat over here at church. Yeah, and we brought it home. It wasn't doing too good, but now he's doing good. And anytime we need a cat sitter, we have a cat sitter right over there. Okay, next slide. And this is if you came to the spring banquet, I invited my parents and my brother and his kids and all. So, you know, I brought them so they could, you know, see how God had worked in my life. And if you wanted to, you could ask them about all the stories I'm going to be sharing. But anyway, that's my dad. He's from the Philippines. He moved from the Philippines in the early 1970s. You know, he came with nothing but the clothes on his back. And really hard worker. He was a janitor at a preschool in town. And that's where he met my Chinese Hawaiian mom, who was a preschool teacher there, and she continued to be a teacher throughout her 30-something years of teaching. And my brother, he's 3 years younger than me, and he also works for Hawaiian Electric as a lineman. And this is my brother, and he has a wife who's also a teacher, and they have three boys. The older one is Rylan, the middle son is Ren, and the youngest one is Tyler. Okay, so this is a picture of everybody together, and if you can see it, you can see the only two kids that's making goofy faces are our boys. Okay. So, as you can see, we all have boys, and wives are teachers, and yep. Anytime it was always a joke, whoever would have the first daughter would have the most spoiled kid in all of the universe. So, if you're keeping track, I'm Filipino, Chinese, Hawaiian, and when I first started dating Jen, you know, her grandma would always say, "Is the Uchinanchu boy coming to dinner tonight?" And I think that's why she liked me at first. So I have no Japanese, no Okinawan, but I really do love andagis. So just real quick, a little background information on myself. I worked for Hawaiian Electric for 17 years. I was a meter reader, and I worked in the as an overhead lineman. For this past year, I worked for the union. And in a few short weeks, I'm going to be going back to the line crew. It was a really tough decision, but you know, when I took this new job as a union assistant business manager for the union, it was a new challenge for me, and I really wanted to do well at it. But in December, as you all kind of know, I was elected to be an elder, and you know, I talked with Jen. You know, we have all these, you know, my plate, a lot of it was on my plate. I was getting pulled in to the church responsibilities, pulled into my work responsibilities as a assistant business manager. You work 24/7, they call you dinner time, you answering emails, and it's just nonstop around the clock. And then we have our two boys. And, you know, Jen said, you know, it seems like you have a lot on your plate and you're going to have to reevaluate. And I said, sure, you know, I'll give it 3 or 4 months and see how it works. And during those 3 or 4 months, of course, you know, I talked with Stan and Daniel and Stephen, and, you know, one verse that Stan shared with me was 1 Timothy 5:8. And it goes, "If he who does not take care of his household, I mean, take care of his relatives, especially those who are in your household, that person has denied the true faith, and that person is worse than non-believers." When I, you know, thought about that, I was like, you know, it was an easy decision. So around April of this year, I told my boss that I'm going to be going back to the line crew. And the good thing about working as a lineman, you know, you show up to work at 7, and at 3:30, you're done. You don't have to think about anything else. I can concentrate on my kids, I can concentrate on church. So that was my decision. So in about 2 weeks, I'm going to be outside in the hot sun sweating, and no more air conditioning. My hobbies, surfing, whenever I can. I try to aim for maybe once a week. This past week, was no surf, so I couldn't get out into the water. Video games, I don't play video games as much anymore. I used to play more, but now there's not enough time. But I do have time for UH football. This is like Jen's, I don't know, she calls it like one of her worst times of the year. She doesn't have her husband for the whole day on Saturday. So we go to the tailgate and we go to the games, and when they're away, we have, you know, our barbecue at home and all. So, and I also like to cook, any kind of cooking, all kinds of stuff I like to try. And I like to watch YouTube videos. You know, you can go down that rabbit hole and just keep on clicking on videos. You know, for the most time, I watch talks, political talks, you know, sermons or videos, funny kind of videos. Okay, so before I carry on, I'd like to begin with a couple important Bible verses that are key to what I'm going to share today. So the first one is Proverbs 22:6. "Direct your children onto the right path, and when they are older, they will not leave it." And the next one, Jen. Matthew 7:24-27. "Anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents and the floodwaters rise and the winds beat against that house, it won't collapse because it is built on bedrock. But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey it is foolish, like a person who builds a house on sand. When the rains and floods come and the winds beat against that house, it will collapse with a mighty crash." So growing up, I wouldn't say that we were poor, but I would say that my parents really, really, really worked hard and made lots of sacrifices to ensure that we would receive a solid education centered on God and Jesus Christ. My brother and I attended Our Lady of Good Counsel School in Pearl City. And even though my mom was a teacher there, it was pretty expensive to send two boys to private school. And, you know, so I remember all the ways that my parents would try to earn extra money. And one of them was delivering phone books. You remember those things? Phone books, right? Davis, Tira, do you guys know what phone books are? They don't know. See, they don't know what phone books are. Just checking on you guys, too. You know, they're my kids, so I can pick on them. But anyway, phone books. I remember loading up all the phone books in my dad's truck, and he would drive along the road, and we'd be walking on a sidewalk, and we'd take those phone books and drop it off at the houses. And we would also recycle cans, you know. Nowadays, they incentivize you to go and recycle because they charge you the 6 cents per can. So a lot of people recycle, but back then, we didn't have any fees related with recycling, so it wasn't as cool as it is now, you know. So we would recycle cans. I remember smashing the cans, and we would take it to get extra money. And more importantly, on the weekends, my dad, he would do auto body work on cars. So he would hustle up some business from some families and friends, and he would fix dents, and we would sand them, and we would prep the cars. We have to tape all the handles, tape all the trim, you know, tape all the windows, and get it ready for spray painting. In addition to that, we just had a garage that with open garage. So in order to prepare the garage to make it a spray booth, we would have to cover all the openings with canvas, cover it all up so no dust would get in and ruin the paint job. So we would do that many, many times. And one time I remember sweeping the ground and a piece of asphalt came off, it broke off. And I picked up that chunk of asphalt and I looked, wow, so much layers. All this time spent just working and, you know, trying to earn some extra money just to send us to, you know, a private school. And in addition to trying to earn extra money, my parents also tried to save money as much as they could. So I remember at OLGC, Our Lady of Good Counsel, we had, you know, uniforms and we had pants. And, you know, boys, rough and tumble, we have holes in our pants and stuff. Nowadays, you get a hole in your pants, you throw it out. Back in the day, she would go and patch it. She would sew it and patch it. So she would save money that way, but she would take it to the extreme too. She would buy longer pants, like 2 or 3 inches longer. And normally, when you hem a pants, you just cut off and leave like an inch, and you fold back maybe like a half an inch or something. She would fold the whole thing back, like 3 or 4 inches. And then next year, she would just cut the stitches and just let it drop. So we would have the whole pants for like 2 years. And then one story that really sticks in my mind was when we were waiting 1 year for our Christmas tree. And it was getting really close to Christmas, and we were going to visit my auntie. She lives in Waimalu. It's right before Pearl Ridge, and we were coming from Pearl City. So we're driving on Waimalu Road, and, you know, Buzz's Steakhouse is on your left, and you're going down right before you see Safeway on your right. We're driving down, and then she looks at the dumpster behind Safeway. And there's a bunch of Christmas trees all thrown in the dumpster. So she pulls into the parking lot, she opens her door, and she throws a Christmas tree inside our car. But we didn't care. We didn't care. We were like, we had a Christmas tree. We were so excited. But I will tell you something. Over all the years, that's the only Christmas tree I remember. So, you know, they got it from both ends. They'll try to earn extra money, and they'll try to save some money, you know? But so what's the point of all these stories? You know, my parents realized that they wanted to build a solid foundation on God. And they were willing to make these sacrifices to do so. And at the school that we were at, we would learn all the basic concepts of God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, and we'd learn about what Jesus' death meant. So yes, you know, I was a believer early in life, But believing and, you know, having a relationship is very different matters, you know. Even the demons believed in Jesus too, right? So I would say I had a relationship with Jesus, but it was kind of like a immature relationship. I would say maybe adolescent relationship. And I'll share with you another embarrassing story. But as a Catholic, you know, you have all these rituals. We have, before you go into the church, you have all these bowls of holy water. Then you dip your holy water, and then you do the sign on the cross. They also use the water to bless people. They use the water to do baptism and stuff like that. So I didn't know at the time, but they also bottle the water, the holy water, and the priest would bless it. You could take it home for whatever purposes you wanted. So this was about when I was intermediate years or so, and, you know, going through puberty, adolescence, and all that kind of stuff. And I had these, you know, the zits were popping up all over my face. And I used Stridex, and it wouldn't go away. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to see what my mom has inside her bathroom. So I'm walking over to her bathroom, and I see this bottle of holy water on her dresser. And I'm like, I wonder if this would work. So I took some of the holy water, put it on my face, and then I went to sleep and said a prayer to God, please take this away. This is really embarrassing. I woke up the next morning, and it was still there. I was so devastated. But that just goes to show how adolescent and immature my relationship with Jesus was. It's one of those things where you ask for stuff. You ask for this, ask for that, you know. And as I moved on to Kamehameha schools, I started getting involved with sports, you know, extracurricular activities. I did football and track, and also had a part-time job. So I started spending more times with my friends, spending more times, you know, doing activities, and, you know, I was pressured to get good grades. And there just wasn't enough time for me to have a meaningful relationship with God. God wasn't even an afterthought. He wasn't even a thought at all. And it showed. I mean, if my family was here, you could ask them how bad my temper was. I had very little self-control. And at one point, I was playing this video game on a Super Nintendo. Nowadays, you have controllers and it's all wireless. But back then, it was all connected to the console. I lost at this game, and I just lost it. I couldn't take it anymore. I ripped the controller out of the Super Nintendo. I ran outside, and I told myself, I'm going to smash this thing to pieces. So I threw it on the ground, and there was some damage, but it wasn't enough. So I'm looking around, and I see this rock, maybe a good-sized rock about that big. And I said, well, this controller is going to get it. So I grabbed the rock, threw it on a controller. The controller broke. But the thing is, the rock bounced, and it smashed my toe. There's blood all over the place, and I was, like, holding my toe on. I couldn't, you know, I had difficulty walking for the whole week. And eventually, you know, the toenail fell off, and then, you know, it eventually grew back. But I don't know how to describe it now. Now the toenail just looks funny kind. I can't describe it. It looks funny kind. There's all these ridges on it. But in any case, it's a reminder of those, to me, about all those times when I really did lack self-control. And, you know, I would like to say that was a turning point, but of course, it only got worse. You know, I went to UH. You know, you go to class, you see the syllabus, you see all the final exams, and you see, and you go to their first class, and they don't even take attendance, and you, I don't even have to be here. So I'll just show up for the test. So, you know, I spent, you know, of all this free time, I spent some of it studying, but I spent a lot of it just going to the clubs, going to the beach, just not doing anything productive. But luckily at UH, that's where I met Jen. And she invited me to church, this church. And of course I said yes, because who could say no to her? You know, I was trying to get on her good side, right? And, but here I am, and God knew what he was doing. And to make a long story short, I graduated in 5.5 years, entered the workforce, we got married, and we bought our house. 3 years later, we had our son Jake. It was at that point we started to attend church more regularly. And we felt that it was important that our children be raised in the church. But I felt that I needed to attend too because my boys needed to see me at church. And you know what's that saying? You know, more is caught than what is taught. You know, more is caught than what is taught. Your kids, you know, people you work with, everyone is just watching to see if your actions align with your words. So I wanted them to learn about God, and I wanted them to know that I was attending church too. But again, that's not really the best reason to be coming to church. But I could say that I was heading in the right direction. So, you know, our attendance was getting more regular than before. And then it happened. At that time, I didn't know I invited Jesus back into my life. But when I asked myself this question and I look back, you know, when did my relationship with Jesus, when was it resurrected? And what was the turning point? You know, it wasn't some huge emotional turning point where I got down on my knees and repented for all my sins, or but it was like any other Sunday, kind of like, you know, today. And what happened was Joyce Tanji, she's not here today, and Jane Nako, Charlie's wife and Darren's mom, they asked me if I wanted to teach Sunday school class. And I think I gave them like a blank look on my face. I was like, what, are you serious? You know, I thought about it, and they said, you know, you don't have to give me an answer now. Go home, think about it, pray about it. And sure, I went home for that week, I thought about it, I prayed about it. So much questions popped into my mind. Why me? Why? Why don't you ask Jen? She's a teacher. She's been in this church longer than me. But, you know, I don't have any experience. I barely even pick up the Bible outside of church. Just tons of questions. You guys kind of get the picture. But eventually, you know, the next week I went back and I told them that I'll teach. And I've been teaching for the last, you know, 10 plus years, you know. There's that saying, you know, I don't remember where it comes from, but God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. You know, he doesn't care about your certificates, your degrees, or qualifications. He doesn't care. He just cares about the heart. He'll qualify you because he's calling you, and he's the qualifier. The reason that moment I decided to teach changed everything was because now I had to be accountable to the children that I would be teaching. You know, they would ask me questions, and I would have to answer. And I wanted to make sure that what I was giving them was accurate and true. So in order to do that, I had to have my questions answered. I needed to seek and understand the truth. And I had to get involved with people who were doing the same thing. I started going to small groups. I started going to conferences, starting listening to podcasts. You know, when I was cleaning yard or when I was doing work around the house or in traffic, I would listen to podcasts. And the more I studied and familiarized myself with the Bible, the more my relationship with Jesus grew stronger. But I can't say from that moment I accepted my role as a teacher at Sunday school that I completely turned over my life to Christ. It was a slow process, kind of like a farmer tilling through the soil, taking out the weeds, taking out the rocks and the stones and the pebbles. And, you know, as all of us are, I will always consider myself a work in progress. In fact, the challenges of being a Christian, you know, never ends. It's easy to act and go back and act how I was before I committed to Jesus. Sometimes, you know, I gotta catch myself, especially during UH football games, you know. Sometimes I just can't help it, you know, you're scratching your head about what kind of play did you just call? What happened? But good thing I have my boys with me. They'll kind of tap me on the shoulder and they'll tell me, hey, Dad, calm down. It's only a game. But looking back, I can truly say, you know, ever since we committed my life to Christ, I think we have been truly blessed. There were some challenging times that we've been through. And, you know, without my brothers and sisters here, a lot of you in this room, we would not be able to receive God's blessings. And I want to thank all of you who came alongside me, mentoring, teaching, praying for us. And you are part of the reason why I am up here today. So in closing, I just want to circle back to my earlier verses. Proverbs 22:6, direct your children onto the right path. And when they are older, they will not leave it. And Matthew 7:24-27, anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents and the floodwaters rise and the winds beat against that house, it won't collapse because it's built on bedrock. But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey it is foolish. Like a person who builds a house on sand, when the rains and floods come and the winds beat against that house, it will collapse with a mighty crash. I'm certain that although there was a period in my life I was far from Jesus and I was drifting further and further away and closer to the desires of this world. But I didn't fully turn away from God because my parents, they chose to build a solid foundation in Christ. Yes, it got worn down, and yes, it did get busted up, but it was still there. It was waiting to be properly built up again. And in this case, it was built up by a lot of you in this room. You know, it was built up slowly and surely, not miraculously overnight, but still miraculous in His time. And I'm excited to see what He has planned for our family in the future. So I'd like to close my time of sharing by saying that maybe your story or somebody that you know is similar to my story. You had parents, Sunday school teachers, pastor, priest, who built a foundation in your heart a long time ago. And I'm here to say that it's still there. It's still there. Anything that is built on Jesus Christ is solid and will not fade away. So maybe it's time for you to start building on that foundation. And if you don't even have a foundation, you can start today. Thank you.